Good morning. What a lovely thing to have to experience just before you come up to speak, that loving kindness meditation. Thanks. I have found it very interesting to listen to what has been said already this month here at Beacon about compassion as well as about the distinctions between compassion and empathy. When I turned to my Oxford English Dictionary, what stood out for me was, I think what we want to see is what we notice, right? That empathy, in part, was defined as the ability to understand and share the feelings of another. That's, we've heard already. Compassion, when I looked at its origins in the Latin, compati, to suffer with, struck me that that was how I felt about it, although it wasn't just suffering, it's also joy, but to feel with. Therefore, in my world, these words are almost interchangeable. And more importantly, if there is a difference between compassion and empathy, then I cannot for a moment imagine feeling one without the other. And I think that's probably true for most people. I've been asked to talk about the role of compassion in my work as a counselor, but it is important for me to clarify that being for periods in my life a client as well in a therapeutic relationship also informs what I am saying today. I work as a trauma therapist, which means I see people who have been hurt physically, psychologically, verbally, sexually, by other people, people who were supposed to love them and care for them, parents, partners, friends. This kind of trauma is called complex trauma. It's a different kind of trauma than that experienced by soldiers or by survivors of natural disasters like earthquakes or floods. Complex trauma involves feeling betrayed. The person you thought you could trust has betrayed that trust by hurting you. Therefore, an enormously important part of the relationship between the therapist and the client involves the building of trust. So how do compassion and empathy play a role in the development of trust in a therapeutic relationship? I'd like to go back for a moment to something Sandy Burpee said a few weeks ago. He provided some definitions of compassion and empathy, and one distinction, if I remember correctly, was that to empathize does not necessarily mean that one takes action. I think that can be true, but for me, and I would hope for most people who are therapists or counselors, and lots of just everybody, conveying in a deep and skillful way that one has empathy for the other is an action. An action that can be deeply empowering and healing for the other. So just having empathy is one thing, but conveying that you have it to the other is an action. My early training as a counselor focused a lot on empathy as well as on how to actively listen. When we listen actively, we are able to convey to the other that we understand in a deep way what they are saying and also what they are feeling. What the other is feeling is often not explicitly spoken by them, but actively listening for emotions and feeling with the other is a very important part of expressing empathy. One might call it the fuel of empathy. It builds trust and safety. Which brings us back to the role that compassion or empathy play in the development of trust in a therapeutic or indeed in any relationship. Feeling compassion and empathy for the other and conveying to the other they are truly seen and heard by me are essential for the development of trust. When one can trust another, then the journey towards healing from trauma really begins. As a counselor, I am predominantly called upon to empathize or convey compassion for the painful emotions of others, such as shame or hurt or anger. But I totally agree with Jean Donaldson's sharing last week about the importance of experiencing compassion or empathy for positive emotions like joy. The feeling with of compassion or empathy means connecting to the whole range of the other's emotions, not just the painful, but also the joyful. And that is one of the things that makes it a very moving thing to be able to go there with your clients. And there is joy that you reflect back to them and that is helpful for them. Working with survivors of complex trauma, I often find myself using my compassion for the survivor to invite them to begin to have compassion for themselves. And lovely with the feeling compassion for oneself in the loving kindness meditation. Sometimes this is harder than having it for others. Excuse me here, find my way. When someone is abused, especially in childhood, they are often told explicitly or implicitly by their abusers or by those they turn to when they are hurt that their feelings are wrong or unimportant. And they often develop a very harsh view of themselves, one that does not permit them to feel compassion for themselves. If we grow up with empathy and compassion, we usually are much more able to have these feelings for others. And conversely, not being around others who empathize with us or feel compassion for us can mean we are less able to feel compassion or empathy for others. Addressing this dynamic in schools is a program called The Roots of Empathy. Probably most of you have heard it, and maybe some of you have attended the courses because they've been around for 20 years. It brings a parent with a baby into the classroom for kindergarten to grade 6 students to interact with. The children are encouraged to notice what the baby might be feeling and to be more aware of their own feelings. Since its creation in 96, the Roots of Empathy program has been raising levels of social emotional competence and increasing empathy, thereby reducing aggression and bullying. I was talking to both of my daughters who teach about how much they see this happening in the classrooms, this program, and it sometimes isn't able to be delivered as skillfully as it was conceived of, but it is a program that still goes on. And I think that our current awareness of high levels of bullying and aggression in schools do not necessarily, I think they reflect some of the technological cyberbullying and things. We hear about it more. I'm not sure whether it's happening more. And hopefully these programs are making a big difference. So essentially, to have felt or received compassion strengthens my ability to feel it for others. Feeling compassion for others is good for both the giver and the receiver. And when I went on the Roots of Empathy website to look a bit more at what was there, I was pleased to see a talk coming up with one of my favorite teachers in mental health and psychiatry, Daniel Siegel, who is a proponent of mindfulness and has met with the Dalai Lama and the Pope and a lot of people a multidisciplinary way. He conceived of the word interpersonal neurobiology, where he's saying it's in relationship that our brain learns how to do relationship, not surprisingly. So we learn from birth to feel empathy and compassion, and this happens in a relationship, and it builds a brain wired for empathy and compassion. And sometimes when I'm working with clients, it's because they didn't have that help early on. Thank you.
So I really enjoy this whole topic about compassion in the workplace, because I think that's very important. And as Bridget was talking about, it's something, I feel like this is something everybody should experience, or, you know, but in the helping fields, it's especially important. So, as I said, you might not believe it, but compassion has been a major tool in some of my workplaces. I worked in several group homes with adults with developmental disabilities, as well as an attendant for students with physical disabilities at Carleton University, which is where I went to school. I don't honestly know how I would have operated in these workplaces if I didn't have compassion. It wouldn't have been possible. And I love these positions, as I was able to interact with my clients on a personal level. And they also taught me a lot about myself. So that felt interesting, selfish. That's another talk. So, when I was working in, there's a few group homes actually in Coquitlam, and Port Moody. And so they're operated under Simon Fraser Society for Community Living. So I had the lucky joy, a little bit too long ago, to be employed by them. And I remember so vividly, like it was like almost like it happened yesterday, when I organized an outing for one of my clients who was in the group home, so since I worked in three. And so we were going to take the SkyTrain down to Stanley Park, and then we would wander around. This is interesting, because this may seem like an easy task to you. But for my client, this was a big production. So we were on the SkyTrain, and I remember when we passed Edmund Station. This is when she told me that she had been her previous workplace. She would get off at that stop. And I said, okay, what did you do? You know, I wanted to develop a good rapport with my clients. And she was paid to lick envelopes, a heinous amount of money to lick envelopes. Now, this took me back. That was a job. Licking envelopes. I had so much compassion for this woman. She was not seen as worthy to operate where she had dignity. So now, every time I pass Edmund Station, I think of that moment. I feel so disgusted in that moment. Although this woman has Down syndrome, I was certain that she was capable of work that was more substantial than licking envelopes. Can you imagine that? I'm sure most of you cannot even fathom being paid to lick envelopes. I know that Beacon has many intelligent individuals who have gone to university, earned a master's degree, gone to college, and work hard to make a career that would support a family. When I worked at Carleton University as an attendant for students with physical disabilities, I was told that there was a high turnover rate. I thought about how difficult this must have been for clients. So they were students. They would always have to be dealing with the clients. Dealing with a new client, in a private and intimate way, as we were caretakers. I was nervous about this position, as some of the transfers from clients' beds to power chairs were difficult. Everyone operated with pagers, and on my shift, I was given the task to see a client. I was so frustrated, as my coworkers told me to have fun with the most sarcasm they could muster. It was my responsibility and it was my decision to decide how I felt about this client. I didn't need their opinions. I approached this client's room, and while doing her transfers, I thought about how she had to put complete faith and trust in a new attendant. She barely knew me. I was still learning her transfer routines. To boot, I accidentally hit the back of her heels with her power chair as I tapped her controller a little bit too hard. Those power chairs are powerful. I'm sure some of you know this. Taking that into account, I told her when we worked together, I would tell her everything that I was doing step by step, and she could correct me if I was doing something wrong. So I want to end on this note. Remember this. When you are in your workplace, with friends or new people, have compassion. You have no idea what the other person is going through. The disabilities I have talked about are blatantly, obviously. But remember, our friends that who look well, too.
Good morning, I'm David Jordan. I work at Sunny Hill Health Center, and my job there is to provide specialized seating, wheelchair, and other seating cushions for wheelchairs for the kids who have a hard time finding a comfortable position in sitting for a variety of reasons. Most of the kids that we see have cerebral palsy and or other various challenges. We might say that the kids are challenged by their multiple disabilities, but I think that we are challenged to consider to see the world from their perspective or to accept their experience of the world, which is not ours. These kids have little ability, often they have little ability to for independence or ways to interact with the world. A little agency is what I would say. And really they are limited to reacting to things that happen to them. And sometimes that means that when we are seeing kids, they are howling. So I see compassion in the eyes of the parents who care endlessly for these kids and bring them to these long appointments. And this is their experience of their child. And I see compassion in the staff and the way that the staff carefully see the child inside the disability and work around. We often say at work that we, as we're working on a wheelchair and the kid is being what might be called distracting behaviors, we say, well, we just carry on as if it's normal, because it is for that family and for that child. And when we are able to provide some greater agency or ability for that child to interact in the world, that's a special joy for us. An example of that is sometimes, as Sita mentioned, kids will get a power chair. So the staff have, I think, acted on compassion in making efforts to identify in this child, is there one way that they can reliably operate a switch with their head or with their finger or anything? So that gives the chance to give mobility to a child, to give them a power chair that they can operate. So the day arrives and the kid is seen and the gym is set up with cones for the kid to practice driving around, and the therapist delivers special instructions to the child to, this is how you do it, and the mom is there. But what really happens is that the kid, once they figure this thing out, is that they run over the cones and they chase their mom, because now they can chase their mom and they have never had this agency, right? So that, to me, is a wonderful expression of the compassion that we invest. Thank you.